Case 28 from the Gateless Barrier. Lung Tan, renowned far and wide. I'm actually going to read the comment first and then the case. Wu Men's comment. Before Daishan crossed the barrier from his native province, his mind burned and his mouth sputtered. Full of arrogance, he went south to exterminate the doctrine of a special transmission outside the sutras. When he reached the lode to Li Chao, he sought to buy refreshments from an old woman. The old woman said, "Your reverence, what sort of literature do you have there in your cart?" Daishan said, "Notes and commentaries on the Diamond Sutra." The old woman said, "I hear the Diamond Sutra says, past mind cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped, future mind cannot be grasped. Which mind does your reverend intend to refresh?" Daishan was dumbfounded and unable to answer. He did not expire completely under her words, however, but asked, "Is there a teacher of Zen Buddhism in this neighborhood?" The old woman said, "The priest said Lung Tan is about half a mile from here." Arriving at Lung Tan's place, Daishan was utterly defeated. His earlier words certainly did not match his later ones. Lung Tan disgraced himself in his compassion for his son. Finding a bit of live coal in the other, he took up muddy water and drenched him, destroying everything at once. Viewing this matter dispassionately, you can see it was all a farce. And now the case. There's a lot to follow, I know. Daishan visited Lung Tan. On his way, he met the old woman and questioned him sincerely far into the night. It grew late, and Lung Tan said, "Why don't you retire?" Daishan made his bows and lifted the blinds to withdraw, but was met by darkness. Turning back, he said, "It is dark outside." Lung Tan lit a paper candle and handed it to Daishan. Daishan was about to take it when Lung Tan blew it out. At this, Daishan had sudden realization and made bows. Lung Tan said, "What truth did you discern?" Daishan said, "From now on, I will not doubt the words of an old priest who is renowned everywhere under the sun." The next day, Lung Tan took the high seat before his assembly and said, "I see a brave fellow monk among you, monks. His fangs are like a sword tree. His mouth is like a blood bowl." I guess that's a good thing. "Give him a blow and he won't turn his head. Someday he will climb the highest peak and establish the way there." Daishan brought his notes on the Diamond Sutra before the Diamond Hall and held up a torch, saying, "Even though you have exhausted the abstruse doctrines, it is like placing a hair in vast space. Even though you have learned all the secrets of the world, it is like letting a single drop of water fall into an enormous valley." And he burned up all his notes. Then, making his bows, he took leave of his teacher. So Deshan was a scholar of the sutras in ancient China, and one who was quite renowned for his what we might describe as academic comprehension, his scholarship of Buddhism, of the Dharma. He could beat anyone in a discussion about any of these esoteric teachings. And yet, when he met this woman on the road, who, by the way, as you see, is unnamed. And this is one of the reasons why in our dedications we say, we don't read this dedication often here, but at Sesshin we do, that we dedicate our practice to the many women and men unnamed. Unnamed. Many of them unnamed, these people in history who have deeply influenced the development of this practice and helped people along the way and been deep, deep practitioners of the way. So he met this woman on the way who shook him up pretty bad. Here he was, this great scholar, just looking to get a little Diet Pepsi. And she lays this question on him, you know, which mind? And he's blown away. He doesn't know how to answer. He's stumped. The know-it-all, completely stumped. And of course, this when we've been in that situation of being the expert, is it can be quite humbling. We grow up in a culture and a society that expects us to know answers. We go to school and we get D's and F's when we are not able to respond correctly to the question before us. It can create quite a bit of anxiety for us when the answer we have is, I don't know. And so under that enormous cultural pressure that we all face, we all live in that world, anxiety can creep up. We're constantly protecting this fragile, I guess, ego, sense of self, the master who knows things. Of course, not in every realm, but in the place where we have our work, perhaps. And this conditioning works pretty deep on us, I think. It certainly did with Deshan. But his response, they say, is not that he completely folds. He decides to keep looking. He decides to ask for some help. So he goes and questions a Zen teacher. And another part of this koan that I really love is that when he questions the Zen teacher, it's not like at the end of the conversation he's all satisfied. There was nothing that the teacher could say that would satisfy his desire to understand. That's important to see. I remember very early in my years of meditation, I would just seek out Sesshin, every Sesshin I could go to. I found some that were held with George Bowman, who was my teacher's teacher. And I would go sit with him for long weekends whenever he came up into this area. One day I was really suffering. I was just sitting there and I felt so anxious and troubled. It was really quite an unbearable feeling. like I was clawing around inside the walls of my own head. And I went to see George, who was offering Doksan meetings. I went in to see him and I confessed to him what was happening. I described my situation and I said, "What should I do? What can I do?" And he looked at me and he said, "I don't know." That was it. I bowed and left the Doksan room. I mean, this is one of like, he is a deep, deep practitioner. This guy sits like nobody. He sits like nobody sits. I mean, weeks, months, years, years and years and years of practice, monastic practice he has. And he was telling me, abandon all strategies. Teachers have a way of disappointing us. I look forward to doing that for you. Part of my job. And inevitable, really. If what we are seeking is some kind of strategy or understanding that we're going to be able to hold on to. Now, of course, there are skillful means in our practice. I've talked about them before. And we should avail ourselves of them when we can. If there are ways of changing circumstances in our lives that allow us to live more contentedly and perhaps be of greater benefit, then we can do that. And we all know that those five remembrances keep coming back, don't they? The remembrance of sickness, old age, and death. The Four Noble Truths, one and two, well, one in particular, that we suffer. There are causes to suffering. That's part of life. And Noble Truths three and four don't erase Noble Truths one and two. So we pursue relentlessly this certain states of mind, imagining that when we can attain and hold on to certain states of mind, then that must be enlightenment. We think we know what enlightenment is. You know, I studied the Diamond Sutra. I got all the answers. Until life throws a curveball, and the answers don't work anymore. And at first, that seems like a bad thing. I was not pleased when Mr. Bowman said, "I don't know." I thought, this guy's got to have the answers. He just sent me back into the hall to sit and stew. And that's what I did. And that wasn't the last time. I love in this case when Deshan turns back to the teacher and opens his heart so fully. He says, "It's dark outside." I'm frightened. I don't have my old stories to hold on to anymore. I feel like I'm coming apart. (Clears throat) And Deshan holds out this false hope of a candle and says, oh, well, bring this out into the pitch black of the universe. Maybe this can help you. And as he's about to give him this cupped flame that could carry him across the waters to the farther shore, he blows it out. And in that moment, in the darkness of not knowing, of not understanding anything at all, of losing every single system of coordinates, past mind, future mind, present mind, all forms of coordinates fall away. North, south, east, west, old, young, good, bad, right, wrong, who knows? Enlightened, unenlightened, deluded. Who can say? Life, death, every duality. Is lost on him. He's in the dark. He's completely in the dark. And that moment of not knowing is the moment his heart opens wide. So often we look at the surface of the ocean and we see the waves. And we think we know the ocean. And we're just scratching the surface. These are our conceptual maps. Our ways of knowing. And beneath the surface of all of this knowing is something unknowable. In any kind of intellectual sense. And so we have this encouragement in our reading. We neither negate nor affirm anything in Zazen. Zazen goes beyond and yet includes rejection and complete acceptance of thought. Now that, you may listen to that and say, hey, that's a contradiction. Aristotle wouldn't let that happen. Poor logic. How can you reject and completely accept at the same time? Because it's not about what we think, per se. We don't have to get rid of anything we think. What we think isn't a problem. Duality is no hindrance to non-duality. The waves are no hindrance to the ocean. Practicing this way helps us understand that our map of the world is biased and incomplete. And this understanding allows us to be flexible. In Zazen, there's no way we can judge ourselves because we cannot step outside our mental formations into true reality. True reality is beyond such judgments. There is no way to conceive of being a Buddha or of being enlightened. Yet without trying to be a Buddha, without trying to become enlightened, in Zazen we keep settling more and more deeply into immeasurable reality. Zazen itself is immeasurable reality. We might say our thoughts just are fireworks going off in the sky. And we're so much more than our thoughts. Our way is boundless. There's nothing that we need to get rid of.
Every feeling, every thought, every skillful means is welcome here. But in our sitting, we also allow ourselves to open beyond all of these conceptual maps, all of our thoughts. We might say we look more deeply. We look not just with our thinking mind, but with our entire body. And at some point, we begin to feel the way the lines that we've drawn between ourselves and everything that exists are quite arbitrary. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't honor them in a provisional sense. We must. Just like honoring the precepts. And there's more. And there's no possible way of describing that more. It's quite outside the realm of our thinking. That old story about pointing at the moon. Don't get stuck in the finger pointing. How do we open beyond our own ideas? Our own ideas about what is? Well, by no longer arguing with them or working with them or struggling with them, or we just sit. We just sit and we let reality manifest itself and show itself to us. What is? Thank you.